Hi, this is Mark Talbot. I post as Alt in a 20-foot radius.
Hi, this is Derek Myers. I post as Amaron at dungeonsmaster.com. And welcome to our podcast, Recounting Encounters.
A show where we talk about what happened at D&D Encounters this week.
Hey everybody, welcome to D&D Encounters Season 12 Against the Cult of Chaos, live from Dundas Square. So Craig, Derek, and I this week talk live from the food court in the AMC Theater. How you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Doing good, doing good.
Nice to see you guys in person. So, we jump right into it. This week was kind of interesting because we all got to play with everybody else pretty much at this.
Yeah, I got a chance to play at Craig's table at the other location, and you got a chance to play at my table at this location, so.
Yeah, so you guys have to come up to Elliott Lake next to play at my table. Yeah, like that's going to happen anytime soon.
That's next week, right?
On a very special episode of D&D Encounters, Recounting Encounters.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice. Okay, so what did everybody do this week? So we'll start with you, Mark. You ran an encounter?
I ran, actually, the Corrupted Priest encounter, the one in the Temple of the Lawbringers. I not only DM'd it for my last session at home, I actually played it with Derek this week, and he DM'd the same one that I DM'd. Turned out very differently both times. Myself, if you recall from last encounter, we did the call to the reptile god, or we defeated the reptile god, and we had to make our way out of the dungeon. So kind of like what Craig did 2 weeks ago. I just changed the skill check that they were walking along and then they would lose a person and, you know, they would look at the ceiling might fall, that kind of stuff. I thought that was kind of cool. We lost no prisoners, they rocked their checks.
How long did it take in-game to do that?
Well, probably about half an hour, 40 minutes.
Oh, really? Spent that long doing just the roleplay to get out of the cavern?
Oh, we were, because when people would fall into a sinkhole or get flooded out, it'd be like, okay, well, what do? We don't want to leave the party. I said, well, you have dark vision, you don't have to breathe, you know, like they were all coming out with all sorts of different techniques and stuff to rescue these people, right?
Cool.
So we didn't lose a prisoner. They rocked their checks. I think the lowest check that we had that whole time was 18.
Nice.
So,
nice.
And it was a DC, just to tell everybody, it was a DC 13 was the base check for anything in the skill challenge.
Now, did their dice cool down during combat?
A little bit, not much. They pretty much handled the encounter quite well. It was kind of interesting because we came in not through the metal doors that they show on the map. Well, first of all, when I ran the encounter, I had forgotten to bring the map to the store, so I used the moat house as kind of an entry point. Very similar setup, doors, you know, open courtyard, that kind of stuff like that.
Had your group actually done the moat house adventure yet? Have you seen that map before?
They have.
Oh, okay.
They have. But we set up a little bit differently. So I had the priestess start off in the teleportation. We had a teleportation room. We had killed the frog-like guy beforehand, so he was not an issue in the encounter. So I made her teleport in through a secret room type thing. She came in. What ended up happening, long and short, is the players came in. They started kicking the crap out of the Deathlock Whites. But it was kind of neat because they were going up, hey, you, speak to me. Speak to me. Stop praying. Speak to me. Then they looked up and it was kind of like Ghostbusters, right? Where the face transformed into like this ghostly visage, right? And then they started attacking and started taking healing surge, and the party was totally caught unawares because they were all split up, you know, just looking at everything. What ended up happening is three of the characters went down before the end. We were playing a party of four. And the only one that was left was Debbie at full hit points. So she said, you know what, I'm getting out of here before he feeds another healing potion to another party member, right? But instead of feeding a healing potion to another party member, she took off. The other party member said, well, forget that. I'm going after her. I've got 7 hit points left, and I can take out somebody who has 42, right?
Now, they didn't know she had that many hit points, though.
No, but they had known she had not been hit yet.
Yeah.
So they knew she was...
They knew
like,
she wasn't a minion.
Right.
Really,
right.
Yeah.
So long and short, he already had a healing potion in hand, took his standard action to feed it to the paladin and took off after. So they were 10, 15, 20 squares away and the whole battle happened. But what ended up happening is they nailed her down, started beating on her. She was trying to leave but kept getting stalled, slowed, immobilized, you name it. They started putting all this stuff on her and the paladin ended up coming back. She put down the rogue, the paladin took her out. So it was quite an interesting encounter at the end. Now tonight was a little bit different. The party was seemed kind of lost, but I'll let Derek kind of...
Yes. So we, same encounter, but yeah, played out differently. So we had, we ran three tables at our store tonight. We actually had had, including you know, Mark, who's obviously visiting from out of town, and another of our buddies who's come into play. I think we had five or six brand new people. We had enough that we could have broken out to do a fourth table and brought the numbers down, but given the nature of how this encounter, this season has broken down, we knew that in order to do that, we'd have to pull some of the players out of their regular group, which could complicate things, which we will talk about a little bit more later. So instead, I ended up running a party of seven, and we just picked up right where we left off last week. They just found the secret passageway. We spent a little bit of time exploring that, and they ended up going to the Temple of the Lawbringer. They managed to break in through the front door, and rather than risk what would have been a role-playing talking encounter against the priestess, they were concerned, I think, that this was a potential combatant, so they immediately ran down the stairs at the first sound of someone approaching, but they did it in phases. So we had three of the party members just charge for the stairs while the rest of them tried to hide. And then the next round, when they realized the one person coming downstairs was just a priestess, one of the players, took his action to sort of distract her. And then the other three characters ran downstairs. And then on the third round, Mark managed to, knock out the priestess and then join the fight. So the heroes joined the fight in waves.
Well, I apologize because I didn't want to kill the priestess because I kind of thought she didn't want anything to do with it. So I whispered to her before I knocked her out that, I'm sorry I had to do this.
And I like that. I thought that was, that was good. So, when the first three went down, they really had no reason to disbelieve the priestess, Devi. And so they immediately ran in the room and charged at the bullywugs down at the other end. And then as the next wave came through, the Deathlock White that was praying by the altar at that time decided to take opportunity attacks. Now, one of the drow PCs had thrown up a globe of darkness. So as every PC came running out of the globe, they didn't realize that the guy before them had taken an opportunity attack. So they all got opportunity attacks as they ran past him. It worked out well. Now, in order to compensate for the large group, I added two more bullywugs, and I increased Debbie's hit points. She's supposed to have 42. I brought it up to 50, but it didn't matter in the end. The number of strikers in the group were doing crazy damage, so I could have probably increased her hit points by 50. It wouldn't have mattered. And
she didn't even get to do many of her attacks either.
No,
she didn't last long.
Well, I had her remain out of combat until the whole party was there, and nobody attacked her because they all assumed she was a friendly. And so I waited for the party to be grouped in a strategically advantageous position, and she used her blast and bursts. I also left the NPC Gareth. He's the frog guy. I left him on the map, and the party actually spent a couple of rounds shooting some, like the wizard took a couple of rounds shooting some missile attacks at him, which really this week won't mean anything. I just assumed that he had enough hit points to take a few attacks, and in retrospect, it sort of was like a little bit of a cheat that they wasted energy on a guy that they couldn't kill, but I'll take that into account next week when they actually meet him again. In the end, nobody fell unconscious this week. I think about half the party was bloody. A couple of the PCs took the brunt of the undead attack, so they're really low on healing surges, so that should make next week's encounter interesting. It worked well. I was a little concerned because it's sort of close quarters. The temple map is not as big as you might think, especially with seven combatants and seven heroes, and I think we had 10 or 11 bad guys by the time it was all said and done. But no, I think it worked out really well. Because we had such a large group, everything took a lot longer. So when they finally knocked out the last monster, I just sort of finished it there. I said, you'll have enough time to take a short rest, and we'll pick things up right here next week when you'll have a chance to interrogate the priestess Devi because they didn't kill her. And that's where we ended things. And then earlier this week when we were playing at the other store. Craig was the DM.
Indeed.
And what did we do this week?
We did the Modos. Yeah, it was because there's a lot of discussion after last week's session as to where you're going to go, because you just finished off the Golden Grade Trail, but you did it in the reverse order, so you ended up with the Lawbringer's Temple as your last encounter. You felt it was safe enough to show your face in town again, but I think you guys decided that the bandits probably posed more of a threat than simple goblins at the Caves of Chaos. You figured that they would have time to perhaps build a bit more of a force if they knew.
If I remember with that party, before this week, we had Modos Part 1, Modos Part 2, and the Caves of Chaos. That's what we have left, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, and then we ended up doing Modos Part 1.
Yeah, that's right. We went to Modos Part 1.
Modos Part 1.
What was that?
Infamous Modos
Part
1. Yes,
indeed. And it started out, Derek was there the week before, so we did just a little role-playing encounter at the very beginning to find out where he was exactly. So he kind of got a little bit of information about these bandits. And he sort of scouted out the Modos ahead of time, so he already knew where it was. And I think that helped to sway the party's favor into choosing that route, because he could safely come and bring him there. So he scouted out ahead initially with another one of the players to discover the two secret entrances. And another group, they decided to split the party, so two of them were going to stealth in to the...
Plus my animal companion.
It was three and three.
Which was good, because otherwise we wouldn't have made the group stealth check otherwise.
And I mean, that animal companion came in quite handy later on, which we'll get to. So those guys decided they were going to stealth into the... Enda's Tower. Well, of course, you don't know that at the time, but the other group was going in through the front door. So
we set off the trap. We didn't even think to look for traps. I've read the adventure, and I didn't even think to look for traps.
I wondered how that was going to play out. But
I totally forgot.
It wasn't you that went in first. It was...
Fortunately, I rolled crappy on initiative, so the other player had the initiative. But it didn't even occur to me to warn him. I was like, I felt kind of bad.
But you guys had decided first that you would wait for the other players to make their way in first. And then make your way into the temple there. However, so the players rolled pretty good stealth going in the front entrance, so they weren't actually even noticed until they got in, so they were able to make out some sort of the sound of shuffling and like some sort of preparing noise, so they knew something was up, but they all still kind of went into the middle of the courtyard anyway. Meanwhile, you guys were making your way into the side entrance, and that's where the other player set off the fire vial trap.
Yeah.
And immediately it announces your entrance to Enda, who made her way out of the room, hid down the hall over by the crates where they're hiding all the goods. And then the archers opened up on the group that went in. So it was actually kind of a rough spot for a little bit, because those archers had them pinned down for a while. We had the dwarf conscripts come out. One of the first one coming out from closer to Enda's area landed a critical on a charge right away and immediately knocked out one of the...
Leveled the paladin.
Yeah,
which was funny because the paladin on his turn, he made an attack and he's like, this power does XYZ and this much damage. Oh, and as an afterthought, I get +2 to saving throws until the end of my next turn.
Right.
And joking, I said, you may need that for your first death save. And the party sort of laughed and he said, no, think positive. And then Craig critted him, and he was unconscious. And then on his turn, he rolls an 18 on his death save. So the +2 made all the difference.
So I mean, it was kind of hairy there for a bit. We even had the frogs. I kind of delayed them coming in just a little bit, but once they came in, it was looking pretty bad. You guys eventually made your way out when you heard the sounds of battle from Enda's room, and that's when the tide started to turn a bit. You shifted into your wolf form at one point to confuse some of the enemies. So anyone who hadn't seen you shift, I basically gave them a 50-50 chance either they're going to attack the real wolf or the false wolf, which they don't know.
Yeah.
So
I got lucky. The companion took a couple of hits for me, which saved me, or else I would have fallen
down. Especially with Enda's, her shift, what is it? That's right.
Shift and attack with a dagger, and it does like 3d4.
Oh, no, so the tumble toss, that's a tumble toss. And she recharged it a couple of times, too. But, so it was getting hairy for a bit, but then after once one of the dwarf conscripts fell, that's when
we had a good turn. Everybody hit him. I used an action point, twin strike.
Everyone started having good turns. So your wolf thing kind of saved your butt there, and then you were able to disable a lot of the forces up here.
Yeah.
We had another player using her magic missile to just take out the minions, which you, which I thought was pretty smart for her to focus on that.
Yeah, like, you know, you think, oh, minions aren't the bad, but they had, we talked about this when we ran it the last time. Those minions were tough. They had high attack scores, and they did a lot of damage, considering how many there were.
Eight, right? Eight damage, I think it was?
Six or eight.
It's six damage, but they had plus 11 to hit.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, like,
it was, ridiculous.
Like, there's like eight or 12 of them or something.
Yeah, oh yeah, there's eight of them. I even held a couple back initially.
Which it does recommend. Just when I ran it, I didn't. I had them all eight shooting
I figured
once,
because you guys succeeded on your stealth checks to get in.
They weren't in position.
Yeah. Whereas some of them were, but that's why you kind of heard a little bit coming in. Anyway, so you guys ended up taking out. And by the way, the frogs were Mr. Pibb and Dr. Pepper.
Yeah.
Of course.
I did Mr. Ribbit when I didn't know. Yeah, it was either Hoppy or Mr. Ribbit. I don't remember. I only used one. My party was getting crushed, so
I kept it simple and called them frogs.
Lame. Lame.
Yeah, and when I played as a player, I cannot remember the names, but it was something funny anyway, whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway, the tide was turned. You guys ended up taking the name. But it was funny though, when afterwards, when you had to chase her down, she tried to escape, but you were able to hinder her and tie her.
I thought that was, so she made an escape out of the secret passageway, and we were counting the number of squares, and we're like, man, we're not going to be able to catch her, she's going to get away. And then one of the players points to the map and says, hey, can I fire my crossbow through one of these arrow slits?
Yeah, the arrow slits,
they were doing it to you, I don't see why you can't do
it
to them.
Exactly, he's working against her now. But I mean, it worked, he took her right out.
Yeah.
She had very few hit points left. However, afterwards you guys decided to check around, so of course you find the sleeping quarters, you find the goods and everything. But one of the players decided he was really intrigued by the sick inside, keep out or whatever it is, chalk on the wall. And they decide we're gonna open this door. But someone's like, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't. Let's go ask Enda what the hell's in there. She didn't lie. She said, there's some madmen in there. It's crazy what's been happening with this death cult. They've cursed us, and that's where those guys are. It's like, I don't believe her. I'm just going to...
They wrote like a two on his inside check.
Yeah, he wrote an inside check, and I was like,
she's lying. She's hiding treasure in that room.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She's totally covering up her sweet stash. When she said, all right, I open the door. So there's three, I believe, ranged, it's like the archers basically.
Did you crit on one? Craig rolled like five crits, but like four were on minions.
Yeah.
All his minions kept critting. And the dwarf at the beginning critted.
The dwarf was the only crit that actually mattered in that particular round.
But then the next fight, remember you critted the one character, and then the next round you're like, oh, 19, so close. And then you rolled the maximum damage anyway.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, come on.
That's right, it was the two sixes on the 2d6. Anyway, so there was that little moment where everyone was in their own separate rooms, like spread all over the place. And this one guy was in the room while the three naked madmen came at them with their swords, but they weren't hard to take care of. There was the wizard, she's a wizard, was in the courtyard here and was able to magic missile through the arrow slits, so once again that magic missile came in handy.
So now what did your group do tonight when you were the player?
Tonight we actually played the one that you were running, which was the
Temple of, so we all did that one.
Temple of the Labyrinth.
You did it twice, I did it once.
And I ran it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this one, it was, we almost suffered the same thing. Were you there the night? We know you weren't.
No, I
so
missed that
one. The players, when I ran it, came down and they stuck in the corner of the room right by the stairs, and the enemies just totally had them stuck in there. And they were having a very tough time with that. That similar situation happened tonight. So, but me, since I know what was happening with the encounter, I'm trying to keep myself a little more removed. It was getting a little more difficult.
You were playing a wizard, right? Beguiling strands.
No. I was actually playing an elementalist sorceress.
Oh, okay.
I know. I really wish. I love the wizard. It's my favorite class, but this time I was an elementalist sorceress, and I really regret that. But anyway, we got pressed back for a bit. But
did he have an amazing creation?
Sorry.
Did he have an amazing creation?
No.
Sorry, a reference to another game.
Oh, fair enough. Now, we were like rolling on fire tonight, so we took out his line of offense coming in on us, and we pretty much creamed the map.
So you were just saying how your group got caught in the corner. I think I did a pretty good job of splitting the party quite well with mine, because they came down few at a time.
Right.
I managed to divide them up. And because I didn't have all the monsters reveal themselves as bad guys right away, I managed to get some of the heroes behind the lines, and then because Mark's character was the last one down, he was taking care of the priestess and knocking her out so she wouldn't come under any harm. And our wizard in our party tends to be a little cowardly, so...
yes, he does.
Yeah, so he ran up the stairs, and I had the monster follow him. So again, I basically had one of the Deathhawk Whites come up to the main level. We didn't have a map, so we just sort of played it out, you know, theater of the mind. But it was Mark's character, this other wizard, and then the monster. And so they had a couple of rounds of combat removed from the room.
Interesting.
Meanwhile, there was two or three other little fights going on. I managed to get one of the characters locked in one of the rooms.
How early did you get them split up, though?
Right away.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like I let the first two or three, Devi convinced them to go right past her and fight the bullywugs at the back. And then once the next group came in, Devi and the Deathlock Whites sort of just engaged them. So we had clearly two parts. And then Mark's character and the other wizard character were on the stairs. And there was, again, in order to beef up the encounter, I had two more troglodytes get summoned in on the two altars once those other two characters came back into the room.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, again, we talked about it before, like the tactical placement can make all the difference.
Yeah.
Well, we had three controllers in our party tonight, so.
Well, that saved my character a lot, is the fact that I came in late because everybody else was positioned and I was far enough to do all my ranged attacks.
Yeah, I mean, we had three slayers in the party, and I think their output was between 15 and 25 when they were charging. So when they hit, they were just destroying everything.
Right.
But some of the monsters slowed, some of the monsters immobilized, the one slayer got trapped in the room, so, you know, I was able to use the monsters to try and effectively reduce the effectiveness of the slayers. Plus, some of the dice rolls sucked. I think we saw a lot of ones and twos tonight from the players.
Yeah.
And my dice were made, I think I rolled three crits. I definitely rolled two crits on the, which power was it? There's the 2d6, the venomous words from Priestess Devi to ranged attack, 2d6 plus 6, poison and psychic damage. Oh, I critted on that one twice.
Nice. So yeah, for my group, we did, we were cornered in the corner there for a little bit, but after we took down a few of the enemies, the party did end up getting split in the end, but because the enemies were so low in power at that point anyway, it wasn't terrible to...
How many players were at your table?
Six.
Did the DM, to your knowledge, make any adjustments?
Yeah,
did he add more monsters?
He added only one extra bullywug. I personally would have added more, but I think he might have spruced up a little bit of the whites, though, because they seem to take a little bit longer to go down.
Now, you had new players, but they weren't new to D&D.
That's
Is that
right.
correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Whereas with my table, although we were playing seven, we had, I think, three players that are new to D&D in any edition this season. So, you know, there's a little bit of hand-holding that needs to happen.
Sure, yeah.
For mine, I added two bullywugs. That's all I did. I added two bullywugs to bring it up to the party of seven. And I think, you know, given the number of people on the map, it was perfect.
Yeah.
So, for DMs who may, so since we all did this encounter this week, if there are any DMs who haven't run this one yet, what might you suggest? We'll start with Mark. If you had to make a suggestion or recommendation to DMs who have yet to run this Temple of Lawbringer, what might you suggest that they do differently, or what might you encourage them to play up? Or
I would probably recommend I would recommend a balanced party once again for this adventure. I found that too many slayers, too many controllers, yes, you had a lot of battlefield movement, yes, you brought the characters down a lot, but too many of the characters got bloodied. Too quickly, too fast, no healing, you know, they had to...
Yeah, we had a party of seven, and the only leader, it was a hybrid leader-defender, so he only had one heal, which he had to use on himself. The round he used his second win, or else he would have been dead.
And that's the thing, so everybody, there were a lot of people, I mean, combat lasted a lot more because a lot of people had to spend their second win, which was a standard action, to get into position again and all that stuff. So I'd recommend a leader probably, or a well-balanced party. I mean, too many controllers, too many strikers. Number one, the encounter finishes too quickly, or the monsters go down too quickly, and sometimes it doesn't make for a lot of fun, but tonight just happened to be a lot of fun, which is great.
So let me ask you this then. If you are the DM and the players at your group, you have a lot of strikers, do you think if this Lawbringer, or even with the encounters in general, would you rather add more weak monsters, or would you just pump up the hit points on the monsters you've already got?
I'd probably bring down the hit points on the monsters that were there. Like the Bullywugs were low enough in hit points, but I probably would have taken down the hit points of the Whites and kept the damage output itself. maybe lower their attack scores by one or two, just so they don't hit as often, because their attack scores are pretty good, especially the whites. The whites were nasty.
Yeah, no problems hitting. But
the thing was, is that in mine, right, most of the party got immobilized by the whites' range attack, and that was devastating to the party, because then it gave the monsters full mobility. I had three out of four at any given time that were immobilized by the whites.
Ouch. Right? Yeah, I think I only got that attack to connect once.
Right.
And it was when the characters were up the stairs, so it basically kept two of the characters out of the combat for one additional round.
Yeah. That's the one thing. The other thing is the spacing was kind of odd, but I probably would have left the Bullywugs. I mean, you know, if you're playing up Devi, and that's what they say, oh, thank goodness you're here to help us and stuff like that. Well, I wouldn't have the Bullywugs out in the open. I'd have them in the rooms so that when she gives the word that they come out and race against the party. That's probably another thing that I would do.
Yeah.
That's
what I was thinking, and I tried to do this a little bit tonight, was the one Bullywug starts in the room, and it basically says if the characters are in the room and the door closes, they're screwed. They need to make a check to try and get out of there. And fortunately, because we had such a large party, the players were a lot more willing to help each other and not attack monsters every single time. So the one character that did get trapped in the room, by the time they killed the monster, another hero had already come to their rescue and broken the door down. I think maybe what I might have done is, especially since I added a couple of Bullywugs, is maybe had a couple more of them in the room, and it had the doors sort of, described the doors as only being partially open to give them some cover from ranged attacks to force the melee combatants to go in. And then what I did was I said that the Bullywug basically had a rope tied to the door, or there was a rope tied to a pulley to the door, and sort of as a minor readied action, as soon as you stepped in, you just pulled the door closed. So I'm thinking something like that, like maybe just say there's a trap set up, there's a tripwire or something. I mean, it doesn't do any damage, so players probably will give you a little bit of leniency, but I think that might be another possible way to change it if you've got a group where you think they're just going to mow through the monsters, is, you know, give them encouragement to go into the rooms for whatever reason, and then have them get stuck in there. You know, maybe there's maybe it's not really a Bullywug. Maybe it's like a shadow being cast. You're like, ooh, there's clearly something in there. You have to make a perception check or something. You know, draw them into the room, and then it's like, uh-oh, now what do I do?
Yeah. So I think what I would have, one of the things that I've been thinking about with this, especially after playing it again tonight too, is, you know, the moment the players first arrive with that sort of role-playing moment when Priestess Devi says, oh, these guys are after me, and it's pretty obvious the way it's laid out that most, I don't think any
my group had no idea.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
no, okay, they
well,
didn't
nice
they already action. Suspected her, because they're like, oh man, the secret passageway goes to the temple? Oh, don't we have that priestess we don't like? And then I'm like, that's her. And she's like, help me, help me. And they're like, oh, this is why she was all acting weird. There's bad stuff
that's
going
really
on.
Funny. No, you know, I thought
I couldn't metagame.
I personally thought it was obvious, but I guess I was wrong. But I would have, maybe you played it up well anyway, but I would have played it up, her deception of them to try and split the party. And also, I know as written, there's also a couple of prisoners in the cells. Maybe
oh
having,
crap! I forgot to include
yeah.
that.
Well, you, but the thing is, it has no.
They
meaning.
Didn't go into all the cells, so I'm just gonna say
it
they
has
were
no
in
meaning if they haven't like picked up those seeds from earlier in the season, right?
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So what I would have maybe done is maybe have them come running out as you know, innocents on the battlefield, kind of thing, maybe, or something like that. I don't know. Just to add a little more flavor.
I gotta think there's a couple of players in my group, they wouldn't care, they would just mowed them down.
It's true.
It's like, so don't fall for being in the way.
But then you think about it, that's gonna affect the reputation in town afterwards.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Like, these guys get the job done, but at what cost,
yeah.
right?
We took out the bandits because, and five of the townsfolk.
Because that was the same thing when you're escorting the prisoners out of the caves of, out of the Reptile God Cavern, is that if you lose a certain amount of them, then you're kind of known as the guy who got
yeah.
a whole bunch of guys killed. And
well, mine killed Ken and Isidé and saved the rest for some reason.
Nice. One of the other things, not specific to tonight's adventure, but just to the encounter, the module in general, that seems to be more and more obvious, especially tonight with my group, with a really large group. We've got a lot of players that are new to the game, and with a table where you've got a full party, six or seven, it's probably a good idea for the players to designate a party leader, not necessarily a person playing the leader class, but to designate a party leader so that if there's any time where the party's not sure of which direction to go, the leader can step up and say, as the leader, I am making a call. Because we had, in the last couple of weeks, the party that I've been running, they've been able to, they've had choices, and some have said A, some have said B, and then half the table's like, let's just roll and figure it out. It's like, you know, I don't think you'd be so wishy-washy about it. Like,
yeah.
I think that the party would have done themselves a better service by saying, you know, this character is the party leader, and when we can't make up our mind, we're going to do what they say.
That's just good advice for the whole season, I think.
Yeah, well, I think for D&D in general, but yeah. I'm finding with this, because there are so many options, and you're presented with so much stuff, and different players are going to pick up on different bits that they find important, I think it would certainly help. I mean, maybe it's a little late in the adventure to sort of be bringing this out now, but...
That was what was brought up by one of the people we asked, right? They said that there's just so much going on that indecisiveness is a big thing, and so a party leader would be probably a very good idea.
Yeah,
I mean, for a group that enjoys the role-playing side of it, you could even have that be sort of a little internal party conflict. Well, this person's designated the leader, but you know what? I really want to be the leader, but I don't necessarily want to, you know, fight about it at this point, and then you could always role-play that up a bit.
And I mean, with the amount of stuff happening this season now, like more than ever for the previous seasons, it's more important to focus on the previously on D&D Encounters moment to get into little details, right? Like Gareth, who shows up now, and he's going to show up later, and that type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay.
Speaking of options, we've been talking a lot about options in this encounter, and in this encounter season, I think it's just, I don't know about options, what do you guys think? I think that there's just a lot of options, a lot of loose ends, and I can see at the end of the encounters that all these options, all these little adventure hooks, all these little hooks that you give people, all these people that you interact with, good or bad, there's going to be a lot of loose ends at the end of this encounter season.
Yeah, I agree, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, though.
No, I agree. I mean, there's certainly, the way I see it is, if I had been writing this adventure, you want to make sure that there's enough there to satisfy any group. I mean, obviously, that's always the hope with these encounters programs, right, is right. that happens. And I think by providing more stuff than they could possibly do, you're going to have more interest from a wider variety of groups. But, I mean, Mark, I know what you're saying. You know, at the end, it'd almost be nice to have like a little checklist. Like, in Layer Assault, you have a glory tracker at the end where it's like, what did you accomplish? And then you check the boxes and you get glory points. It might be neat to have some kind of scorecard at the end to say,
or maybe a wrap-up encounter or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like that, but I also like, even for certain things that they might have followed up on but never saw through to the end, like, just the idea of, like, you could kind of put a cap on it, but not necessarily with, like, this was the definitive ending for this character. Like, this guy disappeared from no one ever heard from him again.
Yeah.
Sort of keeping him. Because I think one thing I really like with this season, because it's more like a traditional module, it has some of that living world stuff happening, right? Like, stuff is happening, you chose to go here, and then this crap happened in town and you weren't there for it. An example of that is if you go through the reptile cavern and you come back to the pawn shop, then because the reptile chaos kind of disrupted the town a little bit, her helper, the dwarven owner's helper, murders her and takes off. No, it's not Green Egg. This is at the pawn shop. There's a dwarf who owns a pawn shop, and she has this guy that has a couple of Drake guards. And if you clear...
Yes, I remember reading that. And it hasn't come up in any of the games I've run or played yet.
But if you clear it before going in, then he murders her and takes off to the moat house.
Interesting.
So that's just... So if they decide to go... Like, I brought that up specifically as a seed when we did the moat house this week before you guys went, because if they went there, because they'd never gone to the pawn shop, they would find a murdered dwarf and perhaps some... Because it's pretty clear that there's tracks of escape getting through there.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? Like, but mind you, if they had visited before, they would have met this person. They would have known that there's this other person as a possible suspect.
Yeah.
But anyway, just things like that I find interesting. Yeah. It makes it feel more alive.
The other advantage that I can see about this, I mean, you know, as much as I brought up a negative point, there's so many seeds that are open. But at the end, I mean, for all the new players, from what you guys are saying, you're getting a lot of new players. These new players might just take some of these NPCs and make them just giant NPCs in future campaigns that they might play with the people they get together with.
Yeah. I really see this season being a good starting point for players that are new to D&D, come to the store, play the adventure, like it, and then decide, you know what? Let's keep playing these characters in our home game. And I think that the Homeline that's been presented in this adventure, there's so much there. It's so rich. There's so many NPCs. All the locations are fleshed out. But you could easily keep running this as a home game for a couple of levels. No problem. Look, I love that there are even a few hooks that have nothing to do with any of the three adventure paths that are going on. And, I mean, I haven't had the opportunity yet to throw them into the adventure, but, I mean, if I ever ran this as a home campaign, like, those are the kinds of things that I would throw out at the beginning and then, you know, sort of come back to them again and again.
Yeah, oh, Grand would so be the mafia boss for me.
Saucy Grand.
Yeah. Saucy Grand.
The power behind the power.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, so far it's going good, and I think another thing to note, too, and I think we've talked about this before, generally, in the stores we play at, in my experience, the season usually starts out pretty big, and then over the, you know, the next number of sessions, you have a little bit of fall off. Some people who might get disinterested have real life commitments, whatever, but you don't necessarily have a lot of people jumping in at midpoint because, like, oh, well, they're already halfway through, I'll wait till the next season. Then your next season starts, you have another big boost of players. At the place we're playing tonight, I find that we're just getting
every week
we're getting bigger. We had a couple guys who were away for work reasons tonight, but then we had three more take their place. So had those guys been there tonight, you know, we would have easily had a full third table, I should say.
I mean, it's great that we're getting new players, but it's almost unfortunate because it's going to be harder to incorporate new players into the living adventure, if you will.
Yeah.
I mean, if we had talked about this earlier, if let's say, for example, we had three new players, well, that's not enough to run their own session. So you would have had to bring players from the other groups, and then you're going to find, again, we've talked about this, just the nature of the adventure, they're going to end up playing a session that maybe they've already played, or they're going to miss out on a session down the road. So, I mean, that's obviously a challenge in the design of this season, but so far it hasn't been a problem. Like,
yeah,
it's worked really well.
Yeah, I haven't run into a problem yet, so I've really enjoyed it this far.
Yeah, no, I'm really enjoying it.
That's far, I'm enjoying
it. I'm almost disappointed there's only 3 weeks left.
Yeah, no, I was thinking the same thing today.
It's a little non-linear for my learning style, but I'm learning to be a little more less linear, and it's working out. It's turned out really okay.
That's actually a good thing about it, too, for people who are, who are DMing and who maybe don't have a lot of DMing experience outside of encounters. This is bringing it, you're right, like, into more of a sort of, like, an on-the-fly DM style, right? So you can adapt to changing situations, because anyone who's run a home game knows you plan for the players to do everything in the book, and then the one thing that they do is the one thing you didn't think of.
Yeah.
Now, to that point, though, this season is probably one of the more difficult seasons for a DM who has little experience to step in, show up at the store, and have them say, look, we need another table. Who wants to DM? And have a guy put up his hand and go, I'll try it for once.
Great.
Like, especially if you haven't been playing. One thing, if you've been a player, at least you have an understanding of where things are going. But, like, to have a brand new guy show up and say, I'm willing to DM the new table tonight, like, it's going to be exceptionally difficult.
Well, the hard part is understanding the first 20 pages of this module, and that'd be the hard part for the DM. They'd have to have at least an hour or two to read ahead.
You need to know the information there, but you also need to know where to find it too, in a pinch.
Yeah. It's almost like you would need a debrief from the other DMs just to
know what's going on. I still don't even know where to find it all.
It's not as well laid out. I almost feel like you could just make yourself a cheat sheet for yourself.
Yeah.
Specialized to your table.
Well, I've actually, one of the things I've really enjoyed this season is the one table, so Craig's running it and I'm playing, and then the table where I'm playing, one of the other DMs from the other store is a player. So when I've got questions or there's something's going, like when you have those two DMs at the table, it's good, and it's good to be able to say to them or to point, like, and I've been able to do that when Craig's running, sort of remind them, don't forget this. And likewise, when I'm running it and I'm not sure, I'll turn to the other DM and say, what happens here again? Or for the other guy again, he'll prompt me and say, don't forget, page 20, look this up. I'm like, oh, thank you.
Yep.
So, I mean,
we've been helping Monster Powers and that kind of stuff. Like, tonight I nudge a little bit, but there was, you know, and I get that from my players too. Like, my DM at home, the guy that DMs with me, he sits there and he nudge, and he'll tell me and say, hey, doesn't this person, oh yeah, I totally forgot about that. Yeah, all right, here we go.
Yep.
You know, so you can help out a lot. A lot of DMs can help each other out.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. Okay, so I guess that's it then. We'll we'll convene for now, and we'll be back next week. And do we have any idea what our parties are doing next week? Has it been telegraphed, or is there still...
Well, I'm pretty sure we're moving in... Oh, wait, what did we do last week? Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure we're probably going to do the Moat House.
I would think we would do part two of the Moat House once we get the secret password.
I mean, it's either that or Caves of Chaos, but I imagine it's going to be the Moat House.
And I got to think with the group I ran tonight, they're going to go right on to the Reptile God, because that seems to be the logical progression.
Yeah.
And what about with your group?
I'm going to the bar fight, but it's funny enough, we're actually going to be doing the bar fight from the tunnel in, from the bar down.
Okay. So that should make it a lot more interesting.
I've been doing that the whole backwards, right? Reptile got it started with Craig's little idea, and then it's just kind of backfired. I've done the whole second section backwards.
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting how they're going to go in. They're going to find the secret tunnel because that door hasn't been opened yet.
Right.
And it's locked from that side.
Interesting.
So it should be interesting.
Okay, well, we'll see how things play out next week then.
Indeed.
All right, well, until next week, I guess we'll talk to you guys from Elliott Lake next week.
Yes, sir.
Great. Talk to you then.
All right. This concludes D&D Encounter Season 12 Against the Cult of Chaos Session 5.
You can follow me on Twitter at Amaron_DM, and be sure to visit DungeonsMaster.com for original D&D 4th Edition material, including a weekly field report of my D&D Encounters experiences.
And follow me on Twitter at 20foot and visit 20footradius.blogspot.com for your weekly dose of D&D Encounters. That's 20footradius20ftradius.blogspot.com. Until then, have a blast.